welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. We have someone who's super That's So Cincinnati today as our special guest. So I am really looking forward to talking to Wendy Rice, who has literally like the best title ever. And I should ask her if this is what's on her resume. Head hippo handler at the Cincinnati Zoo. Burl, my special guest host this week. Is there any better job than that right now?
I don't think there's any better job than being in the around the hippo bloat, which is my new favorite word.
Me too.
You know, we should change the name of the newsroom to the news bloat. No, that doesn't sound good. No, that doesn't sound good.
But we all did learn something, a bloat.
Yeah, we did. So I'm excited to talk to her. She is like right there where all the action is happening with Fritz and his debut and all the things, you know, that we care about in this town revolving around Fiona. So this is big. Good guest, Sherry.
Way to go. You know what? We all need a dose of happy news. It does seem like just after COVID and everything. And I really think as much as we love Fiona and she will always be our superstar, I'm convinced of that. We just the birth of a new baby. This is the news we need right now, Fritz. And we did talk about this at the end last week of last week's podcast. I was on Team Ferguson, but I have fallen in love with the name Fritz now.
I think I have too, but we'll see. We'll see what, you know, we'll learn all about this pretty soon. But we have some news this week, you know, like news, like right off your beat, Sherry.
I know. It does turn out that I do still cover City Hall. I've been over at the federal courthouse a lot. There's been a lot of things going on. The city manager search has been whittled to two. It went from 21. A search committee was hired. Aftab Pirovall, it's his job to put forward a new city manager. Then council really vets the person he puts forward, and that's how the process works. So search firm, National Search, he promised this during his election, and he did one. And even I was like, oh, that was just an election promise, right? And he's like, no, it wasn't, Sherry. He's like, I meant it. I want to see, you know, what kind of candidates we get. The list was not greeted with a lot of fanfare, I have to say. People, I don't know what they thought. I think that people like city managers in like Austin and like big cities, well, they're already the city manager of great cities. And so I think a lot of people were like, huh. But he whittled it to two, and he said that they didn't need to be internal candidates. But throughout the process, he really realized, you know, how great the two internal candidates are and understand the city. They didn't necessarily need to be from here, but they had that understanding. And so they are the interim city manager now, John Kerb.
Which is no surprise.
No surprise.
No surprise.
And
because if we go back, Aftab did not waste much time replacing the city manager that was under John Cranley.
Which is not a surprise. Of course, the story goes that the former city manager, Paula Boggs-Muthing, left. She does have, you know, what seems like a fabulous new job at FC Cincinnati, and that she just left on her own to get this new job. But there were some hints that maybe it wasn't, you know, all the happy news that it was purported to be, but this is how this goes.
But it's not surprising. I mean, anytime you have a new leader at the top of an organization, that person wants to put their team together. So not a surprise. So not a surprise that his hand-chosen, rather quickly, interim city manager made the final cut. Were you surprised with the other person on the list?
No. She's an assistant city manager, Cheryl Long, and she is a hard worker who knows this city, and lots of things that you see happening in the city, she's in charge of, but she's just lower key. And, you know, she worked for people who had a high profile and a high presence. And I do give her a lot of credit for being like, you know what? I'm not the city manager. I'm one of the assistant city managers, and I'm in charge of these things, and I'm going to keep my head down, and I'm going to do these things, and I'm going to do them well. And so she's very popular inside of City Hall, even though everyone wouldn't be like immediately like, oh, Cheryl Long. But that's just kind of her nature. She's a quieter person. I think she has a really – both of them have a nice fit with AFTHAB, which is key, how our government works, right? Like the city manager's office, the mayor's office, and council. It's this three-pronged government.
Well, so, I was going to ask you about that, because for listeners who aren't students of Cincinnati city government, can you explain the role of the city manager here versus a city that has a strong mayor?
So here, that person really, the city manager runs everything. I've always called that role the CEO. Like, it's a 24-hour job. If anybody's like, why does this job pay, you know, in the 200s, the high 200s, you're on duty 24 hours a day. Is there a shooting on Main Street? You're getting called. Did a retaining wall fall down? You're getting a call. Is there a significant water main burst? You're getting a call. And, you know, your phone has to be on. It rings during the night. A lot of nights. And so it's a tough job, but you're running the day-to-day. And in my job, I mostly talk to the city manager and people in his office, even though it might seem like I talk to Mayor AFTHAB Puraval and he's everywhere. And we're really learning that that's his personality. We see it on social media and everything. But when I'm trying to get to the nitty-gritty things and ask all these questions, the city manager has the answers.
And I think we saw in the not-so-distant past the importance of having a city manager that shares the same vision and works well with the mayor. Because if that relationship goes south, hypothetically speaking.
Remember when we had editorial board and John Cranley came in, and then separate on the next day, Harry Black came in?
Yes. Harry Black, former city manager, heard that John Cranley had met with our editorial board to plead his case in that controversy, which we don't need to get into the details.
Yes.
And then he had to have equal time, I guess. So he came to make his case. And that was probably one of the most dysfunctional eras of the recent history of Cincinnati city government, when you have the relationship between the mayor and the city manager implode like that. So this is a crucial hire.
It really is. We've learned that personalities do matter in these jobs. So qualifications, of course, we're looking at everyone's resumes. What do they bring to the job? But everybody has to be a good fit or it's not going to work.
So we shall see.
He's looking to appoint somebody like in a special meeting on August 29th. Of course, you know, council breaks for the most part in the summer and they don't return until after Labor Day. But I think already it's a little later time frame than he wants. And the real issue here is the city manager chooses the new police chief. And, you know, the interim, they're working both places. It's working at the city and it's working at the police department, but it's not ideal to go too long with interim people in the roles because you really, as an interim, don't make these huge decisions, changes, anything, because you're like, well, I want the big job and
right.
Just afraid to make a huge change.
It's hard to lock in when everyone that you are supervising knows that you might not be the long-term boss.
Right. So he's
– whether that's internally or externally, people dealing with the city, you know, how much time do they want to take building a relationship with a city manager that might not be here in a couple of months or even a month. So yeah, not the most exciting news of the day, but super important. But not as important as Fritz, right? I mean, let's get real here. What do people want to hear about right now?
I mean, I start my day reading Terry DeMeo. I do want to also say, you know, every once in a while we have reporters on. It's been a little bit. It's like a guest on the podcast. But Terry DeMeo is one of my amazing colleagues, and she has really developed the zoo into – she covers the opioid crisis and a lot of addiction, and she has a very hard job, and she's just developed the zoo as part of her daily job. I'm super jealous, but she is so amazing with it, and you see her caring heart in both places. And so I start my day reading her stories.
Yeah, she writes with a lot of compassion, a lot of empathy. Sources melt into her hands. Uh-huh. She's so disarming. You know, I'd be wary of you. If you were interviewing me, Sherry, I would be, you know.
That never happens.
I would be on guard. But with Terry, you know, I think if our guest has the best job in the city, Terry probably has the second best job getting being able to write about this.
Agree. So anyone who's not following her, I highly recommend it, finding her on Twitter and keeping up on what she's doing.
All right. Well, should we get our guest on the line?
Absolutely. Welcome, Wendy Rice. Welcome to special guest time on That's So Cincinnati. I'm so excited to talk to Wendy Rice. You know, I think she's had some busy days recently. Wendy, yeah. Are you a new mom?
Oh, I mean, I guess technically I have a 2.5-year-old at home, and we now have a baby hippo here at the zoo who is coming up on his 2-week birthday. So that's really exciting. Yeah, I think probably by this point, everyone has been introduced in some form or fashion to Fritz. So yeah, very, very busy days happening here at the zoo.
And we appreciate you telling all of our readers, you know, these past 2 weeks, and people are following along minute by minute. And we appreciate you talking with us over time. But we were like, for the podcast, we wanted to get to know you a little better because you have the best job in Cincinnati right now.
I cannot argue with that statement. Yeah, I absolutely feel like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like to have the golden ticket and be so lucky that not only do I get to be a part of this experience, but somebody's actually paying me to be a part of this experience. Like, I could not ask for more. It's amazing.
So tell me, what are your days like?
Let's see. So right now I am one of a team of 10 people that work in the Africa department here at the Cincinnati Zoo. And the Africa team takes care of Hippo Cove. So we get to manage our bloat of now 4 hippos. At this time, we have one keeper focusing primarily on our hippos about 5 days a week. And that's mostly just to have consistency in the same kind of set of eyes and the same experience, seeing all the little nuanced changes that are happening from day to day. So Jenna is primarily taking care of hippos, but I'm one of the keepers that gets to be support staff on her weekends. And in terms of managing the hippos, it is all about just coming in and making sure that Bibi, our big mama hippo, has everything that she needs to just do her job. And that's the most amazing part of it, is that this baby was born full term and healthy, and Bibi is doing everything she's supposed to. So our job is actually relatively easy at this point. We're kind of just like kicking back, making sure that mama is fed and happy and has a healthy, clean place to keep her baby, and watching the magic unfold as she raises him and like introduces him to their world. So it's thankfully it's a lot less work this time around than it was with Fiona.
What kind of personality is Fritz developing? In one of our stories, your director of animal care, I think Christina Gorsuch, said that this would be an opportunity to compare what a baby hippo boy is like compared to a baby hippo girl. What are you seeing?
So this is really fascinating to me because I think, you know, for all of these years, we probably attributed some of Fiona's like spunk and sass and personality to the fact that she was kind of hand raised and used to interacting with people. But now that Fritz is here and we're getting to watch him grow and develop, now I'm starting to think it's genetic and it must come from Bibi's side of the family, because he has just as much sass and personality and spunk as Fiona ever did. And maybe even earlier on, I mean, he's absolutely hilarious to watch. He's already throwing like these little baby hippo temper tantrums where he'll stomp his feet and throw his head around with his mouth big and wide open and try to look like a tough guy. It's amazing. He's going to be every bit as entertaining as Fiona was for all of us. And yeah, at this point, these are the only 2 hippo babies that I've ever experienced in my career. I honestly don't know whether it's like every hippo baby out there is like this, or if it is like this is just personality and genetics and this bloodline. But either way, I am thrilled to be a part of it. And I can't wait to be able to open a Hippo Cove up so that our guests can come and meet him and experience it in person as well.
Well, we should probably get that burning question out of the way right now since you brought it up, because I think there are people who are, you know, rescheduling vacations and time off work just to be around when you open up the exhibit to the public. What are you targeting right now?
Yeah. So at this point, just like with all of our decisions around our animals, we have to move at a pace that seems to be working for Bibi and Fritz. So right now we're on day three of introducing them to the outside habitat. So they've been spending mornings out there with Hippo Cove closed, not open to the public, because we don't want like the noise of the crowds, and we want our keeper staff to be able to watch really closely and see what's going on while they learn to navigate that space, and especially those deeper waters that are out on habitat. So we've spent the last few mornings doing that. Moving forward, we plan to have Bibi and Fritz will be out in the afternoons. And when we will start to give the public access to see them should be later this week, especially if we see the current trends that we're seeing. Like Bibi is doing great out there. Fritz is doing great out there. She seems to be getting more comfortable with slowly increasing groups of staff viewing. So the next step, obviously, is opening it up and making that opportunity available to our guests. And I think you could see that as early as Thursday afternoon or Friday, and hopefully by this weekend at the latest.
Wow, that's exciting news right there. Has Fritz interacted with Fiona?
That happened for the first time this morning, actually. So as we were shifting Bibi and Fritz onto habitat, they had to go past the holding stall where Fiona was. And Fritz, brave little guy that he is, like tottered over to the bollards, like the bollards that are separating them, keeping them in separate spaces, and peeked his little nose through. And Fiona walked right up and kind of booped her nose to his. And it lasted like a split second. And then Bibi immediately like intervened and was like, oh, no, none of that yet. Like, you are not ready to play with the big kids yet. So she came over and kind of backed Fiona off. And but it was great. It was a really great first interaction for them to have. And it happened this morning. And it's everything we could have hoped to see. Fritz was like appropriately curious. Fiona was appropriately polite in her interaction. And most importantly, both of them listened to Bibi when Bibi stepped in and said, okay, that's enough. Because that's going to be a big part of Bibi's role moving forward. She's going to be like the coach and the referee for all of these interactions that Fritz will have with the other members of the bloat. And the most important thing is that all of the hippos in the bloat respect Bibi's authority and like listen to her when she says, nope, it's getting too rough. You need to back off. He needs to take a break. That's all the sort of thing that's going to keep him safe as he makes this transition into our Cincinnati bloat here. So it was a very, very good, positive first step.
That's incredible. So there was no obvious signs of older sibling jealousy in this case. Fiona was well behaved.
None at all. Although I will admit, like the few times that all four hippos have been in the barn at the same time, and as people come in and gradually turn their back to Fiona to look across the hall at Fritz, I think Fiona is definitely recognizing like, wait a minute, you're facing the wrong direction. I'm right here. So I think this is obviously the first time she's had to share the spotlight quite so much. And I think she's aware of it in some subtle ways, but I don't think that it has like put a damper on her day or anything. I mean, there's plenty of love and attention to go around, especially here in our Cincinnati community. So I don't think she will mind sharing the spotlight at all.
It's so amazing that the hippo family is just like our human families. And we are responding just like humans and understanding like that's how it should be. The mom is the mom, like especially this early on. And to watch her be a mother, and even though we haven't seen it yet, we're just reading all of these stories and how she was protecting Fritz from the deep water and making sure. And that just, it resonated so much because it's the first time you put your child in a water. Like, that is what you would do. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, on one hand, we try not to anthropomorphize too much. We try not to like put all of our human emotions and traits onto animals, because the truth is we can't ask them and we never really know what they're thinking or why they're doing the things that they do. But that's also how we relate to them. We look at the world through our own eyes and through our own lens. And it's impossible not to look at those things and have that exact reaction that you had, like, oh, girl, same. Like when Bibi was in labor, I was like fully recognizing and feeling her. I was like, that's a contraction. I know that face she's making. I have been there. So yeah, it's the same watching her parent and watching her manage her little kid and manage her little kid's interactions with the older sibling. And yeah, just like you said, going outside and venturing into deeper waters. And yeah, the parallels just seem endless, honestly, when you really look at this little family unit. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I think it's one of the reasons that people love them so much and it makes them so relatable. It's like, here's this, you know, 3,000-4,000 pound animal and their lives really, when you get down to it, are fairly similar to ours. And that's kind of amazing.
You had mentioned that Bibi's doing everything that you had hoped she would do in her role as a mother. And I forget what you said exactly, kind of the one in charge. Was there any doubt that she wouldn't be able to do that, that instincts wouldn't have kicked in like that? And if so, what would have been plan B?
There definitely is always the possibility that, you know, a new mom's instincts might not kick in. And, you know, with Phoebe, in her case, with Fiona being her first baby, she didn't get to have that mothering experience. She didn't get to take care of her and raise her from the get-go. So in that sense, Fritz is her first time baby. Like, Fritz is her first chance to actually take care of her child. And that first night after Fritz was born, I think it was like he was born around 9:40 p.m. We were, you know, staff were on hand and watching around the clock. And there was a window of time like around between midnight and 2 a.m. where Bibi was kind of laying off in one stall and Fritz was over in a different stall by himself, and they really weren't together. And it was scary. Those first few hours, we were kind of like having flashbacks to the Fiona thing and like, oh no, what if that instinct isn't there? Does she recognize this is her baby? Does she know she needs to stay close to him? Does the baby know what he's supposed to do? Why isn't he going over to her? So watching those first couple hours overnight, I had a twinge of that fear, like, oh boy, we're going to have to pull out the Fiona playbook and we may have to do this hand raising thing all over again. Which of course none of us want. I mean, it, as amazing of an experience as it was to get to be a part of raising Fiona, at the end of the day, what we all really want for our animals under human care is that they get to have the most natural experience that they can. And obviously that's provided by their own mother. So if the need arose, we were ready to answer the call to action, but we so desperately hoped that Bibi would do everything this time. And then thankfully, right around like 2:30 a.m., she finally made her way over to the stall that he was in, and they kind of touched noses and did lots of like huffing and sniffing and puffing at each other. And then he just became like Velcro baby. He was stuck to her side, didn't leave her side like from that moment on for like the next 14 days. And he's been nursing great and she's been doing everything she's supposed to do on her end. It's so great. I honestly don't feel like we could ask for a more perfect situation for either of them. They're doing amazingly.
So I just had that Grinch moment where my heart just grew three sizes listening to you tell that story. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's been magical. Like, I keep telling everybody, like, watching Bibi with Fritz has done for me what the last 2 years of therapy couldn't do, in terms of like, we all have been through COVID. We have all been through so much in the last couple of years. And this really is just this like amazing dose of endorphins to just watch this beautiful, magical, natural thing happening and Bibi just having her baby and just rocking out motherhood. And it's inspiring and fascinating. And yeah, we're so thrilled that it's going as well as it is. And I can't wait for our public to meet him in person.
I mean, I totally agree with that because I followed Fiona's saga and, you know, she was that worldwide phenomenon. And I read the stories and I, you know, felt happy. But I am obsessed with this story more than even like Fiona's, like, miracle recovery. Is she going to make it? How is this going to go? And it just had like that narrative, that arc before. And I cannot get enough right now. It is making me happy.
Good. That's what we hope. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, that's why zoos are here. We want people to connect with our animals. We want you guys to be able to connect to nature through them. And we, you know, hope that we can all walk away feeling inspired to like keep our natural world in mind as we make decisions moving forward about how we live on this planet and coexist. And yeah, that makes me feel so good. I mean, honestly, I had some indication because the naming of him got a little heated here and there.
we need to hear about that.
Feelings about what his name should be. And that was on our end as well. You know, we had like 10 care staff members all sorting through. We got, I think, 70,000 or more name submissions. It was insane. And honestly, there were so many names that could have suited him and could have been perfect. And at the end of the day, we had to go with something. So obviously not everyone could be happy, but we definitely feel how invested our community is in this little guy and his story already. And yeah, it's cool. It makes my job that much more special to know that like this little hippo in the 14 days he's been alive has already provided so much like love and happiness and just general good feelings for people around the world. And that's really cool to be a part of.
Did you have a name that you wanted?
Yes. So my name submission was Hank. I was really rooting for Hank because it felt like a nice little homage to Henry, Fiona's dad that we lost several years ago. And also, so Tucker is unique now in that Tucker has sired two of the three breakthrough pregnancies that have occurred in hippos in the last 10 years. So this is the second hippo who's been on birth control who Tucker still got pregnant. Which
oh,
is like,
Tucker.
Right, we call it super stud. But the other hippo that he sired has, I think, two names. One of the, I think the public name for him is Vision, but I think that his other name is Tank. So I also thought Hank and Tank sounded sounded cool together. And yeah, but honestly, like I said, there were so many names and each name had different meaning behind it. I don't know if anyone has talked about like the, especially the connection with Fritz's name to the Nutcracker Ballet. But you know, Fritz is like that quintessential little brother character. I mean, he breaks Claire's Nutcracker. He's essentially the root of the whole story starts with Fritz. And in so many ways, we fully expect Fiona to go through this like coming of age thing where it's like being an older sibling and having a younger sibling. There's going to be so many great times. They're going to have so much fun together. But also Fritz is probably metaphorically going to break Fiona's Nutcracker from time to time. And we're fully expecting that. But we know that Fiona will take it all in stride. She's an amazing animal. She always has been. But for that reason, too, Fritz just felt like a really perfect name. So at the end of the day, we all feel like it's a great fit for him. And he already seems to be like embodying it and owning it. And I'm sure like in a few months, we probably could never imagine him as anything else, honestly.
Is Fiona 5 already?
Yeah, 5.5 years old already. I can't believe it's been that long, but yep, she's a big girl already.
So back to Tucker, I'm glad you brought him up. You know, speaking on behalf of all the dads, all we hear about is, you know, BB and Fritz. What does Tucker do right now? Do you have to keep him away? Does he have a role? Is he as useless as most fathers are after a kid is born?
Oh, that's so funny. So at this point, if we're being perfectly honest and if we're looking at like the natural history of hippos, Tucker will not have much role in raising Fritz other than they are bloat mates. They live in the same space. They occupy the same space and they will undoubtedly have social interactions with each other from time to time. But the burden of, you know, keeping Fritz alive and safe and making sure he's doing all the right things, that burden is almost entirely on BB. But we know that like just having Tucker and Fiona around is going to be so great, obviously, for him to have social interactions and learn how to interact with other hippos and things like that. But Tucker, it's not for lack of effort on his part. The other day, he came to the shift doors while, you know, BB and Fritz were off exhibit in our indoor holding spaces. Tucker and Fiona were out on habitat for the public to see. But Tucker left the pool, came up to the shift doors, and there's a gap in that shift door just big enough for like his nostril to fit through. And he stuffed his nose right up to that gap and was just like huffing and puffing and whistling and like doing his very best to attract either BB or Fritz's attention. And they came over and did some huffing and puffing and vocalizing back and forth and stuff. And he seems he's definitely very, very interested in interacting with them, but whether or not his interest is more in BB or Fritz, it's kind of hard to say at this point. I suspect he's more motivated by getting back in touch with BB and spending time with BB again. I think he's starting to feel a little lonely hanging out with just Fiona. So I think he's mostly going to be excited about spending quality time with BB again once they're all back together.
How long has Tucker been with us?
Oh my gosh, not long. I think it's been maybe a full year at this point, or did he come in the fall? Maybe not even a full year. And that was part of the, yeah, you know, the story. Like we, on our end, really hoped that bloat of three of just BB, Tucker and Fiona would have more time together before a baby was added to the mix. Just because we wanted them to be able to kind of establish themselves, get comfortable with each other, figure out the lay of the land of like, what does it look like the three of us living together, cohabitating and getting along socially and all these things before we added in, you know, this curveball of like, now there's a baby. Because I'm sure everyone out there who's, you know, had a child knows how much it changes every facet of your life. So for that reason, that's why we, you know, had BB on birth control, and we're trying our best to kind of time it ourselves. But you know what? Nature finds a way. And Tucker, obviously, being the super stud that he is, got around our methods. And Fritz is here now. And fortunately, it's all working out. So far, it's going as smoothly as we could hope. And hopefully, you know, that next step of the process, just introducing Fiona and Tucker and having the whole bloat of the four of them together, hopefully that goes as swimmingly as everything else has. But yeah, sometimes we can only do so much on our end to control things, as Tucker has shown us.
Will Tucker stay with us now for the foreseeable future, at least?
Yes, that is definitely the plan. And I keep kind of cautioning all of our guests and everyone following the story to, like, in your mind, as you talk about this narrative and this family unit, definitely do not refer to Tucker as a stepdad, because the truth is, Tucker genetically is not related, you know, to BB or Fiona. And when he came to Cincinnati, part of his breeding recommendation was that he could potentially breed with Fiona someday if and when she's old enough. And so for that reason, go ahead and cross stepdad out of your vocabulary, because that's going to get a little hairy trying to understand how Fiona becomes pregnant in the future. So we like to refer to him as a bloat mate. And yes, when he was brought to us, he came from a facility where he was alone. He was the only hippo there at San Francisco. So part of bringing him here was wanting him to be able to be housed with other hippos for his quality of life's sake, as well as those breeding recommendations. So yeah, at this point, the most likely scenario is that when Fritz is old enough, Fritz will most likely be moved to a new facility somewhere outside of Cincinnati. And that will be to mitigate any aggression that might happen between Fritz and Tucker. Tucker might start to see him as a threat at some point. And he may get a breeding recommendation of his own. But the most likely scenario is that Fritz will be the first hippo to leave Cincinnati if there's a need to create more space for us here.
And how, not being familiar with the cycle of maturity for a hippo, when Fritz is able to play that part, how old will he be?
We usually read and see in research and things like 5 to 6 years. It's possible it could happen a little sooner under human care, usually because just the conditions are so ideal. Like they don't, you know, they never have to search for food. They have medical care. Every resource they need is readily available. So oftentimes animals can grow and mature quicker in human care. But we've probably around 5 or 6 years of age, we will have to start looking at whether or not housing him at Cincinnati further than that will be an option. And maybe it will, and maybe it will not. Time will tell.
And plus he has that, as you called it, super stud lineage. So there's that factor as well, I'm sure.
So, absolutely. We have to take that into consideration. Like, fool us once, you know, shame on us. But yeah, moving forward, we are going to be prepared and anticipating these things in the future. And hopefully we'll be able to keep ahead of that game moving forward.
So I can tell by Sherry's face she's got a question, but I have to go back to what you said about the birth control and the delivery method for that, and how Tucker was able to, you know, get around that. Was that a surprise? I mean, obviously it was a surprise, but is the zoo industry now looking at that going, okay, we need a different course of action here? Because that seemed a little easy.
Right. That's a really, really great question. And one that, quite honestly, we have been considering and taking very seriously since we realized BB was pregnant. So what happened was BB was on the correct dosage for her size, hippopotamus. And I guess what we are starting to look at and consider now is whether BB's like hormonal components in her body are a little different than what is considered normal. So in BB's case, we are now going to be putting her on a more increased, and it's an oral contraceptive, by the way. So she has to take it once a day, every day, similar to what's available for humans. In her case, it's a liquid, and we put it on a slice of bread and just toss the piece of bread in her mouth. And she eats that along with some of her other diet, like lettuce or apples or whatever we may have for the day. So the delivery method's relatively easy, pretty straightforward. Luckily, hippos are almost always food motivated and hungry and ready to eat. So there's never been an issue on that end. In this case, we just learned that this dosage is not an appropriate dosage for BB specifically, even though it was the correct dosage for her size hippo. So we've increased the dosage moving forward, and we have abilities to monitor things like her estrus cycles and her hormone balances in her body using saliva samples, using fecal samples, using blood samples. So we're going to be paying attention very closely to those things moving forward in the hopes that we can get have a better bead on what's happening within her body and track those things closely. And then hopefully we would be aware if we are wandering into the dangerously, potentially unprotected zone, and hopefully mitigate as needed if we end up in that direction. But for right now, we are confident in the plan that we have moving forward to address it.
These are things that the average, you know, person who goes to the zoo never has to think about. This is just
right. This
insight is just phenomenal. I'm blown away.
Yeah, it's an awful lot, right? All of the secret goings on behind the scenes there. And yeah, and it is fascinating and fun. I think that's what draws so many of us who are in the industry to it. It's like, it's so much more than just feeding and cleaning up after animals. It's a whole telenovela of of experiences going on behind the scenes, and it's always interesting and always fun, and it's always requiring new like troubleshooting and creative ideas and problem solving. And I think that's what so many of us love about working in this industry.
How many people are on the hippo team?
There are 10 of us total. There are 7 full-time keepers. We have 2 temp keepers and 1 seasonal keeper as well.
So we do like to, I mean, we just asked you 9 million questions about your day job. We do like to talk about our guests a little bit so we can get to know them. And I was just wondering, like, how you came to Cincinnati and got this job.
That's also so fascinating about, if you talk to any 2 keepers in our industry, often no 2 have the same story. Like, there's so many different routes that people make their way to zookeeping. But for me personally, when I was in college, I seriously considered becoming a veterinarian, and I thought being an exotic veterinarian would be extra cool. So the first internship I did was actually in a veterinary clinic, and that first puppy came in with parvo, and I realized, oh, I cannot do this. I emotionally cannot handle this. Veterinarians are absolutely incredible, have probably one of the most difficult jobs on the planet, and I have so much respect for them. And I found out right away I did not have the emotional fortitude to be one. But I did discover that I did have a love for caring for animals during their non-sick times. So I did an internship at the Memphis Zoo, and my very first internship, hippos were one of the animals that I got to help take care of. And I absolutely fell in love with it. Like, everything about the job, I loved that I got to be outside. I got physical work in, like physical labor. We don't have to go home and work out after our job. Like, you get paid to do it on the job. And like I said, all the things before about like kind of all of the amazing opportunities for creativity and problem solving, and just being able to build relationships with these amazing exotic animals and learn them and know them in a way that so few people on the planet ever get to have that experience. I loved all of it. But the truth is, I am a Northern Kentucky girl at heart. My family moved around a lot growing up, but we spent the most time in Northern Kentucky. So the Cincinnati area has always felt like home to me. The first chance I had to land a full-time position here at Cincinnati, I took it. And I was originally with our cat ambassador program, so working with our cheetahs. But then a position opened up here in the Africa department, and I really love our lions. They're like my heart is with the lions more than any other species of animal. So I primarily work with them, and I love them. And the fact that hippos are also part of this department is just added bonus and amazing. I figured out fairly early on in college that zookeeping is what I wanted to do in my life. And it's a lot of it's timing in our industry. It's just kind of waiting around for spots to open up. I've read once that there are like more open positions every year in the NFL than there are open keeper spots around the country. Like, that's how very few opportunities exist out there. So it is very much like a waiting game and a paying your dues game and being willing to work for free until one of those lucky paid positions opens up. But for me, yeah, I've been so fortunate. I had a fairly easy route between I started at Memphis Zoo and then transitioned to Cincinnati not long after. And I've been here since, and I hope not to go anywhere from here. I love Cincinnati Zoo. I don't think I can't imagine myself going anywhere else.
How long have you been here?
Just about 10 years now. Yeah, coming up on, like, I think my 10-year anniversary will be in January of next year.
Were you surprised by the love of Fiona over time? You know, we did have this phenomenon, but that it's never really waned or died down?
Yes. I think that is maybe the most surprising thing about Fiona's fandom is the staying power, because, you know, most of us, we have the attention span of like a gnat. Like we're into something and then it's the next shiny thing tomorrow and the next thing after that. It really is amazing how many people have stayed with Fiona. And to see like all of the products that keep coming out, like all of the Fiona books and Fiona ice creams and, I mean, cookies and T-shirts. And every time we add to our bloat now, you know, there's even more of it. So we see these adorable T-shirts with Tucker on them now, too. And I think there's already a shirt with Fritz on it. So, yeah, it's really incredible. And I think more than anything, it is a testament to our community. Like Cincinnati is just an absolutely amazing place to live with this amazing community of people that are just there for each other so often and in so many ways. And it kind of feels like Fiona is like the unofficial mascot of Cincinnati. So she's our girl. She represents all the best parts of our city. And I think that certainly has contributed to how she's managed to stay in the public eye and good graces for as long as she has.
Do your parents still live nearby and like come to see your animal family?
Unfortunately, no. My parents have always been fairly nomadic. We moved around a lot when I was a kid. And even after I settled as an adult and put down roots, my parents have continued to like move around in different places. So they live outside of Atlanta, Georgia right now, but they definitely come back and visit all the time. And they've gotten to meet, they got to meet Fiona when she was a wee little thing. And I think that they have over time, like, grown to fully understand and appreciate this career choice that I've made. And they see like, oh yeah, there's so much about it. And it's, you know, this platform to share the things that I'm passionate about with people and have an opportunity to, you know, make an impact in very strange ways. It's like, I take care of the hippo that people are obsessed with, but that is something to me, you know, that's making a difference to me. And it's the kind of job that I'm so proud of. And it has so much intrinsic value. They've been incredibly supportive my entire adult life. And they come and visit often and see Fiona pretty regularly.
All right. Well, I know you need to get back. There's a lot of caretaking to be done. I really appreciate you joining us today, Wendy.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It's an honor. And I'm always happy to talk about our hippos for sure.
All right. Well, we can't wait to meet Fritz, and thank you for sharing all those great stories.
Absolutely. It was so nice to meet and talk with both of you.
All right. So I have to say, I think that was my favorite interview of the week. Now, to be fair, I think I probably have to interview the two new city manager candidates and let people have people really kind of get to know them on a little bit more personal level, just like the council members are doing right now. So I guess that could change. I don't know, though. She was such a good storyteller.
Oh, she was amazing. And I wish I could have been there the first time Fiona and Fritz, what did she say, like, bumped their snouts together.
Booped.
Boop.
Boop is the best word.
I'm a man in my 50s. I can't say the word boop with a straight face, but I guess I have to now. Yes, when they boop for the first time. So what
right.
a story.
So I have to. I do every once in a while tell Coolidge stories on the podcast. When Jack was little, we booped noses. Like, that's a word that we use in our house. Is that like super resonated with me? Of course, he's 14 now. And as you even get close to him, God forbid.
No more booping.
No more booping.
Are you gonna boop him when you drop him off for the first day of high school in front of his friends? Because if you do that, I want to be there for that.
Oh, I can't even imagine his reaction, but it did bring back like super happy memories for me. My other favorite part of that interview is anyone who knows us, like, I mean, you're the editor of The Inquirer. And while you don't have your eyes on every story, you do have them on like the big investigative pieces, the hard news. Like, that's what I cover. And the two of us were like, we had a million questions about Baby Fritz.
I could have kept going, especially, you know, just getting into the whole, you know, the behind the scenes battle over the name, you know, and how, you know, now that I know that Hank was in play,
I know,
wouldn't that be cool?
I think they just let everyone pick, and they really, that story hadn't been like a recent story that people were thinking about, because I think that would have captured some people's imaginations. And nor when I was thinking it should be Freddie, I kind of loved that. I wasn't thinking about honoring like a family member. Like she mentioned.
No, that was very poignant.
Son's named after my dad.
And also, I mean, you're right. She's a great storyteller. I was kind of on the edge of my seat when she was describing how for the first few hours, BB was not anywhere near the baby. And what would have happened if those mother instincts didn't kick in? It would be Fiona all over again. Now, not the life and death situation, round-the-clock monitoring, but they would have had to basically nurture a baby hippo again. So just fascinating.
And it was the middle of the night, right? Like right. From midnight to 2 a.m. What's going to happen?
Right. I mean, what do you do with how heavy is Fritz now? At least a few hundred pounds. You pick that sucker up and put it over your shoulder and burp it and all that?
I guess you would. That's why there's 10 handlers, maybe.
Can you burp a hippo? See, we have more questions.
We do.
Get her back on the line.
So I'm going to let you talk about our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. I will say I did go to the preseason game, but that already is like, I'm already looking forward to the next preseason game and like TikTok. I can't wait till the actual season. So you tell us your fun thing.
Well, I mean, it's pretty That's So Cincinnati when the city collectively is waiting for its franchise quarterback to step out of the golf cart and take the first snap, which he did after his appendix surgery and looks great and all of that. But there was another story lurking around in the sports world that kind of snuck up on me. And I thought, okay, if this isn't That So Cincinnati, I don't know what is. And that is that the Florence Y'all, the minor league baseball team, I guess I can call it a minor league baseball team, that plays in Florence, is going to do a bobblehead giveaway, which in and of itself is not that, you know, surprising. Bobbleheads are huge in the world of sports, I'm told. That should be another podcast that we can talk about.
Agree.
Bobbleheads at some point, and my addiction to bobbleheads. But anyway, they're going to give away a bobblehead, and it's not a player. It's not a mascot. It's not even a broadcaster. It is the wife of former Reds broadcaster Marty Brenneman. There's going to be an Amanda Brenneman bobblehead, and people are excited about it. And if that's not a Cincinnati moment, I don't know what is. So there you have it.
I have seen her at several events. I have to say, I feel like she has to be very pleased. It is a great bobblehead. So the first 1,000 people are getting these.
Which means that's a small number in the world of bobblehead collection. Usually the Reds give away maybe 5,000, even 10,000 bobbleheads. So it's immediately going to be a collector's item, I think. And you probably don't even have to think too hard who is going to sponsor the Amanda Brenneman bobblehead. Laura's Lean. There's a free plug for Laura's Lean, because if you watch local TV, you see those charming commercials with Marty and Amanda talking about all the things that they can make with Laura's Lean beef. So maybe they'll become our sponsor too.
Possibly. They're the cutest couple that I know.
I would tend to agree. And I heard Marty talking about it on the radio. Very proudly, by the way. And it was the segment he does with Tracy Jones, who used to be a broadcaster in town and a former Reds player. He played for like 6 Major League Baseball teams. And he was very jealous, Tracy Jones, that, you know, in his amazing career as a Major League Baseball player, no one ever made a bobblehead of him. So he's given Marty a hard time about that. But no, I mean, just I don't know too many other towns where we honor our local celebrities like we do here. And so, you know, this officially puts Amanda Brenneman on the map. She's no longer, you know, the spouse of Marty Brenneman only. She is Amanda Brenneman Incorporated. She has her own bobblehead.
Agree.
She has arrived. Congratulations, Amanda. But man, that is so Cincinnati, I can't even see straight.
I don't have a bobblehead. Do you have a bobblehead?
No, so. I don't. I don't. I do collect them, though. Like I said, that can be another topic for another day. But anyway, there you have it.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it. And tune in next week.